Bankless Nation, it is the first week of dreary February. My God, this has started out pretty sad, hasn't it, David?
First week of the bear market. Let's go.
Oh, my God. I feel like we've known it's a bear market for a while, but was this confirmation?
Some people have known it's a bear market, of which you were one and I was not. And
oh,
now,
really? You're just finding this out?
Well, and I was like, you know, prices go up, prices go down. This does remind me of that one day in 2018, halfway through 2018, where like Bitcoin had fallen from $20,000 down to like $8,000 or $9,000, and then people were still optimistic, and then one day it went from $8,000 down to like $4,000, and that's when the whole industry was like, yep, this is a bear market. And I feel like the last people holding out on like whether this is a bear market or
it turns from bear market to like just pure pain market and despondency.
Yes.
Like it's more like and crypto is never coming back and it's dead. That's what it's starting to feel like.
Crypto sentiment right now is perhaps the lowest I have ever seen it.
We'll get into that. It's not just that though. This is a very confusing time in the market. This was a tweet that you sent me right before this episode. I honestly have no idea if we are close to a crash, a melt up, or World War II, an AI industrial revolution, a mother of all short squeezes, a depression, a recession, or aliens. But it sure feels like all these things at once.
Yeah, crypto is not the only sector that is just materially impacted in the market right now. There's like tech stocks to talk about. There's like a rotation. Not all stocks are down. There are some people's portfolios who are just super happy right now.
No, we know.
Yeah, it ain't us. But if you were invested in value stocks and like yield-bearing stocks with revenues and dividends, like you feel pretty good right now.
Yeah, all right. Well, we'll talk about crypto and free fall. The market carnage, we'll evaluate it. The question is it over? And also, Vitalik had this tweet heard around the world. Let's give him a quote. He said this, "The original vision of L2s and their role in Ethereum no longer makes sense, and we need a new path."
Wow.
We'll talk about all the controversy behind this tweet.
Also, the White House is just demanding that the banks and crypto get in a room and hug it out. They want Clarity Act passed, as the demand from Donald Trump. So we're going to talk about all of that news. And also out of the Trump world, the new incoming Fed chair has been named. Who is he? What's his stance on crypto? And is he good or bad for the markets? We're going to talk about all of that and more. But first, moment to talk about some of our friends over at Kraken and their brand new DeFi mullet. Shiny, long, robust DeFi mullet.
Flowing.
Flowing locks of DeFi mullets. It's called DeFi Earn. So if you stabled up in the last few weeks, or maybe you stabled up today out of fear, you can put it in DeFi Earn, get 8% on chain. No wallet, no seed phrase, no transactions. Just put your stables into one of Kraken's three possible stable strategies to get up to 8% APY. Not guaranteed though. And you know how the DeFi mullet works, right? You put the stables in the front, it goes into on-chain DeFi apps in the back. You can get access to that at bankless.cc/Kraken.
Nice to have stables right now. And if you have stables,
it is
well.
Nice to have stables right now.
Yeah. I wish I knew what that felt like.
Yeah.
But you can earn that 8% while you wait for this to all blow over, David.
All
I'm sure it's
over,
just a passing thing. So let's talk about the market and some of the carnage we're seeing. Bitcoin has dropped below the April 2025 bottom. That was the tariff scare. Where are we at the time of recording? You realize, guys, this is falling like a rock as we were even recording this episode.
Yeah, I thought like maybe it paused, but no, it continues to drop. So these prices might be outdated. Who knows? Maybe we bounce by tomorrow. You know, maybe we're out of the bear market tomorrow. Ryan, are back to prices pre-Donald Trump's inauguration.
Yeah.
We are pre-Donald Trump prices back into like the November. Remember when Bitcoin just absolutely rocketed on the news that Donald Trump won the election? That's where we are. We're all the way back there. We haven't erased the entire Donald Trump presidency. So 46% of the in total crypto market cap has been erased since this October 6th. So, you know, 10/10 happened, and 10/10 was like, you know, crypto had already started to roll over. We've lost almost half of the total crypto market cap since that moment. That is not the only story going on in markets right now. QQQ, the tech sector, down 6% in the last like week or so. And then there's this IGV, which is the tech software sector, which is down 17% week over week and 30% in 2026. So not only is crypto crumbling, but other parts of the market are taking a massive beating. This is a unique week in the markets for a variety of markets. Gold, precious metals, are also falling. Gold has fell below 4,500 and silver fell below $72, which represents something like down 12 and then also 30% respectively. Those have kind of come back. But overall, there is just turmoil left and right, no matter where you look.
All right. People are selling a lot of things. What are they buying? They got to exchange it for something. Is there anything that's going up?
Yeah. So energy, consumer staples, and then US dollar yields. These are all up. So consumer staples up 6%, energy is up 4.5%. So boring, cash flow, high revenue sectors have been the
What's a consumer staple? Is that like Procter & Gamble? Something like that? You know?
Yeah. Like, Johnson & Johnson. Recession-resistant products.
The Warren Buffett stuff?
Like, no matter what like the crypto market does, people are still buying like shampoo and soap, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah.
So the theme that I've come to, like, what's a common denominator here is, in addition to crypto having its own reasons to be bearish, we can talk about the Clarity Act, we can talk about the incoming Fed chair that's potentially hawkish. But overall, there's a handful of just like crowded trades across multiple asset classes that like leverage is getting kind of cleaned up and wiped out all at the same time. So you have like the AI CapEx trade, you have crypto and precious metals. They're all kind of seeing the same move that you usually get when like there's a bunch of people on the same side of the trade, perhaps with a little bit too much leverage, and then liquidity is also kind of thin. And so there's kind of just a resetting of some of the risk end of the market, the growth end of the market. And especially with Google's earnings, Ryan, Google announced earnings this week, and they forecasted something like a 50 or 60% increase in their capital expenditure for next week, going from $110 billion of spending to $170 billion of spending.
Okay.
And so the market digested that and was like, oh, this is a lot of money. I'm kind of scared about the whole the AI side of this growth market. Let me perhaps diversify into value.
Okay,
so that's what's happening in trad markets.
So if you want to explain these things, why is QQQ down? It's because there's AI CapEx fatigue, and it's also because SaaS companies are just like getting blown away right now because AI is poised to disrupt them. You know, if AI can write its own software, why do you need a Salesforce CRM? So that's happening. Yeah. And then an explanatory reason for why silver and gold are going down is maybe the Warsh factor, which we're going to talk about. This is the new incoming chair of the Fed, and he might be hawkish, actually. Yeah. We'll talk about that in more detail, but that could be a reason. If you want an explanatory reason for why those markets are selling off, why is there so much more pain in crypto, David? So we talked about the price of Bitcoin now, 66K, and continuing to drop. But what is that? That is down 21% since last week. ETH is down 30% since last week. Just getting absolutely walloped here. Why is crypto suffering for all of the mistakes from AI and SaaS products? And, you know, why are we taking the brunt of this?
Yeah, it's a million-dollar question. There's a chart that's been going around, which is that crypto has had this very high correlation with the software index. Mm. Software is the SaaS index. There's this word that's been coined in the last week, the SaaSpocalypse in the traditional equities market. So as you kind of alluded to, Claude Code came out, Claude Cowork, these new tools that people think can just totally replace entire businesses like Figma, LegalZoom, Adobe, Salesforce. And so the SaaSpocalypse was this week. That's what's going on in trad markets.
Is that what this chart is?
Yes.
Vanatech, so, this is an ETF that tracks SaaS products.
SaaS, if you overlay the SaaS index over Bitcoin, it is the same shape. Like, I know like sometimes like doing stuff like this is a little horoscopy. But like, you can't tell me that doesn't look a
little
bit.
It's the same shape over the last, what is this, 18 months, 2 years? 2 years.
18 months is right. Okay. Yeah, September of 2023.
It wasn't always the same shape.
It wasn't always the same
shape. Scroll out a little bit and it's different. Yeah. So this is selected data, but I see the point.
Yeah. I mean, why is crypto down so bad? I mean, I think we can talk about a handful of things. The hawkishness of the new Fed chair that we talked about. We could also just say the four-year cycle, Brian.
Like, if that's what I want to say.
You can totally just say like, and I have been a fan of like saying the 4 year cycle is dead, but like if you look at the price chart,
I have not been.
It's not what the price chart says. No. The 4 year cycle is just continuing to play out exactly to a T.
That's right. That's right. So I am not one to really like play these cycles. I don't really trade them. But the person I follow most closely, as you know, I'm sort of Mike Nato pilled and have
He is just getting more and more correct. I hope he's doing some public tweeting about taking some victory laps.
I've been trying to build him up. And for Bankless listeners, there's a weekly report that Mike puts out on a podcast called the DeFi Report. And I joined him in those episodes. That's how I've been following this. But he's been calling for 65K Bitcoin, fair market value of Bitcoin, since like October, before even 1010, when it was like not popular, when it was not cool. And this is what's playing out. Like, it's so there's a lot of fear in the market, but at some level, David, if the 4-year cycle is playing out, this is exactly what you would expect to a T from a price perspective, also from a timeline perspective. It's just like not that scary if you believe in the 4-year cycle. Like, that's the thing. I would be more concerned if people like Mike hadn't been predicting that this is exactly where the market is going and this provides a buying opportunity. Now, that doesn't mean as soon as it hits 65K, like it's over. Like you buy you know, this was it. And then
this is the bottom tick.
No, it's going to take, you have some time here. It's going to play out over a long period of time. And
this is when you start being more aggressive in your DCAs, but you don't dump your load.
Right. Yes. And then we have apathy to look forward to, I suppose.
Yes.
But somebody go check in on Michael Saylor and Tom Lee. Okay. See if they're okay, because it seems like they're down bad. What's the story?
The DATs are epically underwater. So we are we are under the strategy cost basis. Current strategy, MicroStrategy cost basis is $76,000 Bitcoin. We are $65,000 Bitcoin. So MicroStrategy is currently sitting at a $6.5 billion loss. So they are underwater by $6.5 billion.
And that seems
which kind of sounds bad. Yeah. Sounds bad. $6.5 billion is a lot of money to lose. Total strategy holdings is $50 billion. So they have a lot of money though.
But so he's been at this for 5 years and he's still under his cost basis. Like Michael Saylor has been dollar cost averaging for 5 years.
Yeah.
And now he is underwater on that dollar cost average strategy, right? It's notable. Yeah. It's not.
Yeah. It's notable.
Yeah. It's notable. How about Tom Lee? I mean, he's only been at this for less than a year, right? How's he doing?
He in less than a year, Tom Lee managed to rack up a $6 billion unrealized loss.
You know, it's greater than that, David. Actually, it's closer to $8 to $9 billion now ETH prices.
Oh, no. Yeah, it's like I'm actually having a hard time like actually getting updated figures on that. So Tom Lee accumulated $4 million at an average cost basis between $3,800 and $4,000 Ether. Impressive that he is beating MicroStrategy. Mind if I keep doing the MicroStrategy in unrealized losses despite only being in the game one quarter of the time?
No, that makes sense, right? Because he bought some at the top. I mean, who among us hasn't top blasted in crypto from time to time, right? Now, here's the thing, though, with both Strategy and Tom Lee is people think that these DATs are going to like completely evaporate and die and go bankrupt or something like that. MicroStrategy does have some debt that we've talked about, but so long as this bear market doesn't last for like many years,
like 10 plus years.
Yeah, I mean,
he's got
debt,
some
is well structured. It's just like not that bad, and so should be able to weather this out, right? Now, you're not going to get an MNAV premium that's like attractive, of course, on Strategy. It might even go below MNAV, like of one, basically. But and then BitMine is in a similar position, except from a debt perspective, like even better. Even though it has those unrealized losses, of course, they're just unrealized losses at this point. It's really no debt on the BitMine balance sheet. In fact, they have a healthy cash position, right?
Right. It was just a bad trade, but they still own all of the Ether and they have no obligations.
It's a bad trade. So far.
In this moment.
Yeah, of course. So, but everyone is dunking on Tom Lee and be like, oh, you idiot. Look, you've lost so much money. I think as long as the market returns, I think it will. Tom Lee will be pretty well positioned. It just might take a long time for that to play out. Like he's going to have to eat crow for a long time. Did you see there was a video clip of him actually calling a bottom at 2,400 ETH earlier this week.
A little early, but yeah, it was just last week in which he caught and we made that clip. The clip's already outdated.
That was not the bottom, but you know, Tom, there's another article I read from CoinDesk saying, you know, Tom Lee saying that BitMine's loss, paper loss, yeah, we could take paper losses by design, basically. It's all according to the plan. I mean, maybe not that, but the structure is meant to weather this type of storm. And of course, they're staking their ETH. Yeah. So they have cash flow, positive cash flow.
He's unliquidatable.
Pretty hard to liquidate, Tom Lee. So anyway.
It's impossible. It can't be done because he has no leverage. He has no leverage.
That's right. Can't be done.
I mean, like, I think the most valid critique of Tom Lee you can say is that he just did not optimize for price execution and just blindly bid ETH at whatever price.
Yeah.
But that's
it. Could have broken a different direction. It just didn't. Mike Novogratz, Galaxy post $482 million loss in this crypto cash crash too in Q4. So imagine what it is in Q1 once that gets reported.
Yeah. No, that's a good point. There's also there was a conversation about during earnings, Galaxy earnings, Mike Novogratz implied that Galaxy had a client that sold $9 billion worth of Bitcoin. And at least mentioned Quantum during that conversation about why they were selling. And so Nick Carter and them went back and forth on this. But Nick Carter emphasizing the point that like Quantum is a dampener on what Bitcoin price can do in the short term.
Yeah, I think that's true. I'm on Nick Carter's side of that narrative. Mm-hmm. Now, if you want to trade on Bitcoin or Quantum or where price is going, Polymarket has some great opportunities for you to go do that. In fact, this is useful to just see the probability. Yeah. What price will Bitcoin hit in 2026? Wow, this has changed a lot. What are we looking at?
Yeah, so you see Bitcoin price in $5,000 increments. And of course, Polymarket is giving, it's telling us the market probability of what the market thinks that Bitcoin price will hit. So the most likely thing, because we are basically there, we're just a few couple hundred dollars away, $700 away, is $65,000. But you can go in either direction. $60,000, there's an 80% chance, according to Polymarket, that Bitcoin will hit $60,000, as opposed to only a 47% chance that Bitcoin will hit $100,000 in the year of 2026.
And all it has to do is hit it. So it could just touch it, right? Just wick it and these conditions will be fulfilled.
Yes. Yeah. And so you can kind of see, this is an interesting financial tool.
It's really interesting.
I would like to see how accurate or capital efficient this tool is, but I don't think we've ever seen anything like this, I guess other than like implied price for implied volatility from options and stuff like this.
Yeah.
But like
options are so opaque to me. They're hard to kind of reason about.
Yes, this is very easy to reason about. Like 55% chance, according to Polymarket traders, that Bitcoin hits $50,000, $50,000.
Okay, but David, there's a 5% chance that we hit $250K this year. All right? So don't give up.
That's more than just a chance.
There's always a chance. One of the interesting things about this crypto crash, as Eric Balchunas has observed, is that this is primarily coming from OGs selling. And I guess, David, you made the
it's
point earlier to me.
That's always how cycles end.
I echo that, and I agree with you. But this is Eric Balchunas. He says, facts. Only about 6% of the assets in the Bitcoin ETF have left. 94% hang tough, those ETF holders. They're hanging in there, despite a nasty 40% downturn and many being underwater. OGs, on the other hand, the OGs are selling. So they are selling to the new holders who are, I guess, institutional TradFi ETF buyers. That was their
turning of the wheel.
This is
the cycle. This is what happens. Welcome a new generation of bag holders. Welcome to
you
the Bankless Podcast.
You got dumped on.
Now come join the community. Eventually, you wait enough cycles, you will be dumping on people. They will come join the community, and the cycle repeats. And every cycle, Bankless gets new listeners. This is great.
But there's always a next cycle, right, David? There's going to be a next cycle, right, David?
Until proven otherwise.
All right. Until proven otherwise. This is some hopeful take. If you want to inject some hopium. Mm-hmm. I don't know. You may not be in the mood for
this, please.
Matt Hogan said, actually, I know it's crypto winter, but the good news is crypto winter started last January 2025. He goes through some justification.
So we're 13 months into this?
Yeah. He goes through some justification and he basically says, he shows that, well, crypto winter started last January. We just didn't feel it until now because ETFs were doing so well, essentially, because of DATS and the institutional bid and ETFs. And so if it started 12 months ago, maybe we're closer to spring than you think.
Yeah.
What do you think about this take?
I think that's right. I think that's right. One, well, despite the fact that I'm poor now,
yeah,
I feel refreshed and optimistic about the opportunity that is presented to me. And this is something that Zeneca said in a tweet, just kind of like, you know, markets take psychological discipline. And I think that's maybe like say, something I would just kind of like to call out of just there's
investing is pain.
Investing is pain. This is a psychological experience. This is an emotional experience. Despite how everyone's supposed to be an unemotional investor, investing in markets is fundamentally about your relationship with your own emotions. One thing that he says, he puts out just like a list of advice, and I want to kind of read out a few of these things. Number three is one of my favorites. Recognize that as the price goes lower, more people give up. Your competition literally leaves. There are outsized returns for people that stick around. So like investing just gets easier as people fundamentally give up. Six, go on walks. De-stress yourself. It's worth noting that if you are in this market and you've lost a lot of money, you are probably stressed out even if you don't think that you are or don't want to admit it. And so take a moment, close your eyes, have a deep breath. It's okay to be stressed. Ignoring your stress is worse than not ignoring your stress.
Stop checking price all the time.
Stop checking prices. Do what you need to do to maintain good psychological health, because bad psychological health will lead to what he says in number seven, obvious traps that people fall into when trying to feel better. Alcohol, drugs, leverage, revenge trading. Don't do that. You need to be smart. This is when the opportunities are here. So be smart. Overall, there's a link in the show notes to kind of list all of Zeneca's tweets. But overall, I ask listeners, if you want to maximize the opportunity that we have ahead of us in the next year, be honest with yourself, be psychologically sound with yourself. And that's how you prepare yourself to be a good investor.
You know, it's a bear market when Bankless goes full therapy mode on a weekly roll-up. Huh? That's good advice.
I got to put my undergrad degree in you somehow.
That's good advice, though. My take on Matt Hogan's take is I think he's being a little too optimistic. So I'm still in the camp of Michael Nato, where the actual bear market started in October. We get a full year to put in. So not until October of next year will things start to look a little more springtimey and will we get some buds. Until then.
But does that mean that you are DCAing? What are you doing about that fact?
Oh, you got to, either DCA, if you have, stables or something like that, and you can always DCA. You can DCA through all markets. That's kind of the default strategy. If you're
yeah, but I like timing
investor.
My DCAs.
All right. Well, if you time that... it, honestly, if you time it, I would clue into the DeFi report and, Mike thinks fair market value is 65K and under, and then he's going to start going risk on. So I would tune into that. And, not quite yet, but it's getting really attractive out there, I think, for long-term holders, probably. David, we got more to discuss, including Kevin Warsh, the next Fed chairman. What's he about? And is he positive for crypto? He says some things about crypto and Bitcoin. Also, Vitalik, his comments, is the roll-up-centric roadmap over, David? Was this the pivot? What is happening here? We'll talk about all that and more, but before we do, we want to thank the sponsors that made this episode possible.
Have you checked out Showdown yet? Showdown is poker rebuilt from the ground up by some of the world's top players in Hearthstone, Magic the Gathering, and poker. With Showdown's action cards, an additional layer of gameplay is added onto the game of poker. Action cards give dueling players more agency, strategy, and tricks for winning the pot. Built on Mega ETH's real-time blockchain, Showdown has completely abstracted away everything crypto. Privy hides the wallet, there's seamless payment and deposit flows, and Mega ETH makes everything happen in real time and zero fees, making Showdown ready to onboard your friends without any friction. It's also free to play and built without any pay-to-win mechanics. Players compete in the free market and with real money on the line. Showdown is played with Mega ETH's USDM in the background, so when players deposit money into Showdown, it's converted into USDM, connecting Showdown to the USDM flywheel that all Mega ETH apps contribute to. You can play Showdown for free, so you can practice and get good before you get comfortable with real USDM on the line. Experience poker like never before with Showdown. Check it out at alpha.showdown.com. Game. What if you could trade gold, Forex, and global markets with the same tools and speed that you use for crypto? That's exactly what BitGet TradFi unlocks. After strong beta demand, including over $100 million in single-day gold trading volume, BitGet TradFi is now live for all users. Inside of your existing BitGet account, you can trade 79 instruments across Forex, precious metals, indices, and commodities, all settled directly in USDT. No platform switching and no fiat conversions. This is BitGet's universal exchange vision in action. Crypto and traditional finance side by side. You get deep liquidity, low slippage, and leverage up to 500x, letting you apply crypto strategies to macro markets. New to TradFi? Start with gold. The gold USD pair is liquid, macro-driven, and a familiar natural bridge between crypto and traditional markets. Try trading gold on BitGet now at BitGet.com. Click the link in the show notes for more information. This is not financial advice. Last Friday, Trump named Kevin Warsh as the new upcoming Fed chairman. Kevin Warsh is a former Fed governor and also Bush economic advisor. He's nominated to replace Jerome Powell as Fed chair starting in May 2026. So not now, but kind of soon.
Did you know, David? So he was in the FOMC, but he actually rage quit the FOMC. He was one of the governors. He rage quit somewhere around, I was 2010, 2011, because he was fine with the initial bailout stuff. But then when the Fed like doubled and tripled down on quantitative easing, he was like, that's not what we should be doing. This is bad Fed policy. He prefers like quantitative tightening, and he thinks that the Fed has been grossly irresponsible in terms of intervening in monetary policy in the way that it has and expanding its balance sheet in the way that it has.
Do you mean post 08 crisis, a couple years after that, after the initial reaction, he was criticizing the Fed for being too zerpy?
Yeah. Ah. Well, less zerpy. Okay. Zerpy, you mean zero yield, right?
Yeah, so, zero interest rate policy.
It's unclear what he will do with interest rates. I think he will lower them. In fact, Trump is kind of indicating that, like, that's kind of why I picked him. But there's some Trump comments here. But less zerpy, but more a critique of how the Fed has done quantitative easing. So buying assets, basically, and placing it on its balance sheet.
Oh, being more hands-on and opinionated than what they could have otherwise been.
Yeah, he basically says it was a bailout for Wall Street. Asset price inflation.
It was a bailout for Wall Street.
Yeah. Asset price inflation is a bad thing and like shouldn't be done. And it caused massive wealth inequality in the US. And like he's saying many of our talking points, essentially, which is why he's an interesting choice from Trump.
Okay. What about crypto? What does he think about crypto?
So he had some interviews. He said that Bitcoin is the new gold for people under the age of 40. He's also a holder of crypto. Here's his on-chain metrics. So
we have his wallet.
We know his wallets. We think we know his wallets. Anyway, he's got about 9 Bitcoins. He's got about 745K of crypto assets between Bitcoin and ETH. That's probably worth a lot less now.
It's mostly Bitcoin. It's mostly Bitcoin. It's 9 Bitcoins and 6 Ether. So, you know.
Yeah.
A little favor to Bitcoin.
People from crypto, like Avichil from Electric Capital, like know him, think he's an excellent pick for Fed chair. Actually, let's get this direct quote because he went back and forth with an interviewer about Bitcoin. This is what Kevin Warsh had to say.
You made reference to Bitcoin, and I thought I heard a little bit of condescension that people are buying Bitcoin and these things.
But doesn't it, Charlie Munger, this is 2 or 3 years before he died, Charlie Munger attacked Bitcoin. He called it evil in part because it would begin to undermine the Fed's ability to manage the economy.
Or it could provide market discipline, or it could tell the world that things need to be fixed.
Bitcoin does not make you nervous.
Bitcoin does not make me nervous. I can hearken back to a dinner I had here in 2011 with someone who is another guest on your show. I won't say his name. I just did Mark Andreessen, who showed me the white paper. That was the original white paper. I wish I had understood as clearly as he did how transformative Bitcoin and this new technology would be. Bitcoin doesn't trouble me. I think of it as an important asset that can help inform policymakers when they're doing things right and wrong. It is not a substitute to the dollar. I think it can often be a very good policeman for policy.
So his comment on Bitcoin is basically that it was a check on bad Fed policy. I think pretty healthy
accurate,
from that perspective.
Accurate and healthy. Yeah.
Yeah. And he mentioned Mark Andreessen actually introducing him to it. So he's not afraid of it. He's familiar with that world. He's a crypto investor, at least at some level. This is why Donald Trump, according to Donald Trump, actually picked Kevin Warsh. Trump called Warsh highly qualified, predicted that he would be remembered as one of the great Fed chairmen who would not let you down. Did Trump pick him because he would cut rates? Trump was asked that very question. He replied, We talked about it. I've been following him. I don't want to ask him that question. I think it's inappropriate.
That is hilarious. What?
And then he went on, it probably would be allowed, but I want to keep it nice and pure. But he certainly wants to cut rates.
What?
He just wants to, out of the goodness of his own heart. Of course,
it would be inappropriate to tell the Federal Reserve governor to cut rates. So I'm not going to do that because I want it pure. Wow. What kind of double talk is that?
So Kevin Warsh is also, I think, highly respected among investors. So he worked for Stanley Druckenmiller. Mm-hmm. Ray Dalio also likes him. So Ray Dalio said he's respected for his capabilities and judgment. He understands the risks of having a Fed policy that is too easy as well as too tight, how to judge what's what. That's a good take. Luke Grauman actually thinks that he will be less, because people are talking about him as being actually hawkish, maybe more hawkish than Trump.
That's the word that everyone is describing this guy. He's a hawk. I think he
could be by default, but there's a difference between what you say when you're outside of the chair and when you're in it.
Yeah.
Okay. So like he might be constrained by all
sorts
of
things. We know this from Gary Gensler.
Yeah. And so Luke Grauman quotes, he says, Warsh is the hawkish choice for Fed chair, but in 2018, he co-wrote this Wall Street Journal op-ed begging the Fed for more liquidity. That was despite strong economic growth in 2018. So it's a mixed picture. Yeah. We don't know what he's going to do until he's actually in the seat. It's hard for me to, like, I know Michael Nato was throwing out there like, hey, he could be like super hawkish. But then there's always the question of like, then why is Trump
so comfortable with him putting him in there?
Because Trump is not one to take short-term pain for long-term gain, right?
No.
If there's any Fed policy that prescribes that, he's going to not want that to happen.
Yes, yes, yes. Granted, Trump also doesn't know what Kevin will do once he is in office, because once Kevin is in office, he gets to act somewhat independently. He can piss Trump off if he wants, but one does have to, like, you know, begs the question, why is Trump so happy with him coming into office if he doesn't think he's going to get exactly what he wants, which is a easy money paradigm for the
markets? I mean, the minute stocks drop, okay, he's going to want those, you know, that money to flow. Anyway, we'll see what happens. It's a mixed picture. Very interesting choice, though, for sure. David, let's get to the tweet heard around the crypto sphere. This is from Vitalik. It's a long tweet, really. What's the thing to focus on?
The thing to focus on is that he is retracting, I'll say he's retracting the roll-up centric roadmap to Ethereum. He's taking the centric out of the whole roadmap North Star for Ethereum and saying that many layer twos, or focusing on layer twos as the enshrined scaling solution for Ethereum's plan, no longer makes sense. That's what he said, no longer makes sense. He does not say that layer twos make sense. But he is saying that, like, layer twos as a North Star for the Ethereum technical roadmap no longer makes sense, and we need to pivot. He didn't say the word pivot, but I'm happy to pivot what Ethereum's scaling strategy is to something new. And so he kind of reframes as layer twos as needing to be strongly customizable or strongly specialized in some specific direction. Whereas generalized EVM equivalent layer twos that don't do anything other than just like add scale to Ethereum is now kind of redundant, because he is talking about how incredibly scaled the layer one is about to be in the short term. And that's kind of like the broad strokes of it, I'd say.
I've seen so many different interpretations of what Vitalik is saying. Maybe we should just read a few things that he said, actually, just to put it in his own words. And this is, he said, there have recently been discussions on the ongoing role of layer twos in the Ethereum ecosystem, especially in the face of two facts. These are the two facts. L2's progress to stage two, and secondarily on interop, have been far slower and more difficult than originally expected. Okay, that's the first. The second is, L1 itself is scaling. Fees are very low, and gas limits are projected to increase greatly in 2026. Both of these facts, for their own separate reasons, mean that the original vision of L2s and their role in Ethereum no longer makes sense, and we need a new path. Talk about that new path in a minute, but this to me is saying that the rollup-centric roadmap that was instantiated sometime in,
October,
say, 2020, didn't work out quite the way yeah. Vitalik had hoped, or that the rest of Ethereum had hoped. Yeah. Well, I guess maybe, yeah, there's two reasons here. One is the progress has been slower, particularly mm-hmm. in the stage two. Interop hasn't quite worked. Right. And right. then also, now this is the good part of it, mm-hmm. L2 has found a ZK-centric scaling path
yeah.
where scaling Ethereum via route of L2s no longer become necessary. Now, let's go back to October 2020, okay, and the rollup-centric roadmap. The rollup-centric roadmap to me, and I think for people in the Ethereum community that were there, basically was the way Ethereum planned to scale, mm-hmm. right? It was a message of Ethereum will be always kind of slow. Therefore, we will extend Ethereum block space via these layer twos.
By these
and so
yep.
if you are an app, if you are a user and you want to extend Ethereum block space, you must do it on an L2. Mm-hmm. And that is the scaling roadmap, essentially, for Ethereum. There's other things on the back burner, like maybe we figure out how to scale L1 yeah. at some point in time. But rollups were really the path forward for scaling Ethereum at that time. I mean, is that mm-hmm. your recollection of things?
That's right. Yeah, that's right. And everyone got in line around this strategy pretty quickly, and investment into the layer two space grew rapidly, because what Vitalik did was he put scaling Ethereum into the free market and allow the free market to really like solve that problem. And a bunch of things happened that I don't think you could have really have hypothesized back then, but no one individual rollup team had any sort of incentive to build an interoperability standard. In fact, five different interoperability standards came out of that, and not anyone was really picked by the market. And this is one of the failings that Vitalik is saying that never really happened.
He does say that L2s have a place, right? And he talks yeah. about L2s. They can't just be a clone of the Ethereum L1.
The EVM, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Basically, they should differentiate in some way. So you can imagine something that is extreme levels of a scaling, something maybe like a mega ETH or
yeah.
you know, app centric layer two, something like a lighter doing perps. But the days of just cloning Ethereum L1 and all of its apps and spinning up an EVM right. and setting up an optimistic bridge and you know slapping stage one on it, he's like, that hasn't worked out very well for Ethereum.
Yeah,
that's a summary. I mean, there's a lot here, right? And there's multiple interpretations of this. But to me, this reflected something that needed to be said probably, mm-hmm. right? Like
yeah.
A pivot that we had hoped to see, that you and I had talked about before and had hoped to see from the Ethereum ecosystem of like, hey, let's get back to scaling the L1. And L2s are great. That path is already moving forward. But that can't be the focal point for Ethereum block space moving forward. And I think he said the quiet part out loud with respect to that. Some people, though, feel like he also, in this tweet, threw L2s under the bus a little bit. And
I don't know. That's not how I feel.
How do you feel?
I feel like some people are frustrated that, like, you know, Vitalik pushed for layer twos and then has like pivoted Ethereum away from them in a moment of time where like the market had already realized that, and many people in Ethereum had already realized that. And I think people are frustrated. One of the things I feel is that like, why does Vitalik seemingly have to be the last person to admit this?
You're frustrated that it took so long.
That it took so long, and the person with the most amount of influence and control took the longest amount of time to really come to this conclusion, where other people in the industry, in the crypto industry, have been saying this for anywhere between 0 and 4 years now, depending on like where you are in the market. And I think a lot of people are frustrated about that. One thing that I'm seeing that I will also resonate with is like, I'm glad that we are finally able to speak plainly about this. There's been just a lot of bike shedding about layer twos that I think we don't have to do anymore. And so there's something just like intellectual honesty comes to mind. Some people were praising Vitalik for that. Overall, you and I are going to do something like a 40, 45 minute long episode on this. So we won't cover all of the details here comprehensively, but like it's a big moment in Ethereum's trajectory and it deserves a lot of attention.
I think so too. I think it's the end of an era. I do think this is a pivot from the rollup-centric roadmap mm-hmm. perspective. It's worth some reflection. What went right? What went wrong? I do think L2s were overall and are overall very net beneficial. And so there's this weird kind of swing on the pendulum where I feel like we're going a little, some people are going a little too far and saying L2s mm-hmm. are useless. It was a waste of time. I don't feel like that. Anyway, you and I will be recording an episode and talk about all these things shortly. Let's maybe get a reaction from the rest of the community here. So this is Tomash. What was his take? He is the executive director of the EF.
Yeah, he gave out a handful of takes. His first one is that many, many Ethereum layer twos have already specialized, despite Vitalik taking, you know, until 2026 to say that specialized layer twos are the way to go. So he's kind of alluding to the fact that, like, the layer two landscape has already been moving in this direction for years. And he also emphasizes, really, I think, what Vitalik understated, which is that the idea of a ZK VM is an incredibly powerful scaling strategy that is now the core focus of that. And then a handful of other things. But I think those are the two main things.
This is Ryan Watkins. He's an investor. He's been historically, I think, fairly bearish on Ethereum.
Highly skeptical of Ethereum ever since this whole like roll-ups versus monolithic chain debate became a thing in like 2023.
Yeah, but he says this, a lot to be excited about in Ethereum lately, explicit plans to greatly scale the L1 formal team for quantum resistance, retheorizing the role of L2 so they expand the app design space, native roll-up precompiles. He's basically saying, this pivot is exactly what I want to see as an investor, and he's swinging more bullish on it. So that's an outsider's take. Joseph DeLong is an insider, and he had maybe more the pessimistic insider Ethereum community type take that I saw.
Yeah, he tweeted out, I joined Ethereum to displace banks. Ethereum now feels like Vitalik's little Urbit-esque side project building a temple to nothing. Urbit is a... How would you describe Urbit? A distributed systems nerd snipe around... It's very hard to describe it. Maybe that kind of illustrates the
point. It's been the next
point.
Big thing among nerds for like 10 years, right? It's like a decentralized operating system. Huge,
yeah, even,
kind of
even
scope,
more
niche
than like the Linux believers. And so he's basically saying that just like this is just like a niche upon a niche of like an interesting computer science project. And he joined Ethereum to displace banks. And so I think Joseph is... emblematic of many people who feel like they have dedicated 5+ years to building out this Ethereum vision that the market realized that was invalid a while ago. And finally, Vitalik's catching up to the point and people have like wasted a lot of time and resources.
Yeah, venting some frustration.
Venting frustration, which I think is totally fair.
It's
and
okay
I would
to
like
vent?
To also do that.
Well, I can't wait for our episode then.
Yeah.
There's also a bear take here. This is from Tom O'Shaughnessy. He basically says, I think it's going to be very hard for allocators to rationalize being long ETH in 2026. And he gives a reason why. On the technical side, Vitalik is calling for scaling L1 and using L2s for specific use cases, but both of these are achieved on faster L1s like Solana, who have been accelerating on progress like this for years. Ethereum got me in crypto in 2017. I think Vitalik should be massively respected for calling this out, changing course, but he thinks it's going to be an uphill battle for Ethereum.
I will say, maybe to tie this section off, the day after Vitalik put out this tweet, a PAY, which is a rollup that uses Celestia for DA, transitioned to becoming an Ethereum layer two. And so like to some degree, whatever Vitalik's saying doesn't matter. Like Ethereum's network effects are Ethereum's network effects and people will deploy layer twos on Ethereum no matter what for their own reasons and purposes. Despite whatever Vitalik is saying and how the market has like moved away from emphasizing layer twos are still the best business model for blockchains and crypto full stop. And that is still a fundamental truth.
There you go. All right, more to cover. The Clarity Act, does it still have a chance of passing? There's talks in the White House this week, but it might require Trump to give something up, which
that's
is all of his crypto holdings. Also, Polymarket opening a grocery store, David, in your hometown. Yep, that's real news.
The Polymarket is what it's called.
All right, guys, we'll get to all that and more. But before we do, we want to thank the sponsors that made this episode possible.
Hey, Bankless Nation, it's David. If you're hearing this, that's because you are listening to the free Bankless podcast feed. Did you know that there is a premium Bankless RSS feed? The premium feed has extra interviews that I do for my own personal research and just deeper questions that I want answered about the crypto industry. Questions that I want to answer so I can be more informed as an investor, both at Bankless Ventures and also just in my own personal portfolio, too. Also, there are no ads, which means if you listen to the premium feed instead of the free feed, you'll get about 20 hours of your life back every year because you choose to support Bankless directly. So if if you're interested in getting extra content all while skipping the ads, or you just appreciate what we do here and want us to keep doing it, we'd appreciate it if you signed up for Bankless Premium. And there is a link in the show notes to get started. Cheers to a good 2026. Few people in crypto put real skin in the game when they make public top or bottom calls. The DeFi Report is one of them. The week before the October 10th flash crash, Michael from the DeFi Report emailed his entire newsletter saying he's going aggressively risk off and sold the majority of his book from crypto into cash. This is when ETH was about $4,000 and Bitcoin was $110. Michael runs the DeFi Report, an industry-leading research platform built on data, cycle awareness, risk management, transparency, and most importantly, skin in the game. We like Michael at Bankless. We like his analysis, and that's why you hear him on the Bankless podcast about once a month. And the DeFi Report is giving Bankless listeners one free month of access to the DeFi Report. So if you're looking for some sharp, data-driven analysis to make better informed decisions around your portfolio, you can learn why and how Michael called the top and what he's doing next, all in the DeFi Report Pro. Check it out. There is a link in the show notes.
How is the Clarity Act going?
They're in talks.
That's where it has been. That's where it has been.
They're not talking.
So Tether has come out on the side of supporting the ban on stablecoin yield, which is the opposite side of where Coinbase is, which is...
That's the crux of this thing. They're all fighting over the stablecoin yield. Who gets it?
Well,
the banks?
That's the crux. And also Donald Trump's being able to profit from crypto, but we'll shelve that for a hot second. So Tether has joined basically the side of the banks. Why is Tether on the opposite side of Coinbase?
Yeah, it's surprising. It's a crypto native company. And, you know, Coinbase is saying, hey, the yields should go to
Should go to the people. Yeah.
Right? We should have the ability to do that rather than the banks. But Tether's saying, no, it's okay. I mean, the provisions of the Stable Act were fine. Mm-hmm. Keep in mind, David, Tether makes a lot of money
All the yields. Tether keeps all of the yield. Coinbase wants to give the yield away to the users and to the stablecoin holders. Tether has no interest in doing that.
And I don't think it's because like Coinbase is like, you know, are the good guys or whatever. I mean, that's an okay view of the world. But like, I also think it's like a one-dimensional view of the world. Let's just go where the incentives are. I mean, Coinbase has more to gain by passing on yield to its customers and making money from user acquisition another way. Mm-hmm. Ways. Mm-hmm. Tether has a lot to gain from still stablecoin yield right now. So,
yeah.
You show me the incentives.
Everyone's playing their incentives.
Exactly. Everyone's playing their incentives. And this is why. But it is interesting to see how a crypto native company can quickly become an incumbent and do something maybe like anti-crypto user. Mm. So it's interesting that Tether is coming on the side of the banks. But there's some back and forth with Brian Armstrong and the banker of all bankers, Jamie Dimon. What the heck was this?
Yeah, so Brian Armstrong has been dubbed enemy number one on Wall Street. This is in the Wall Street Journal. Just because Brian is not backing down on the stablecoin yield thing. So it's basically Coinbase versus the banks. And like, you can't really deny why the banks are doing this. This is the entire business model of the banks. And so you have Brian Armstrong telling the banks, hey, we are going to die on the hill if you guys lose your business model. So you can kind of guess why this tension is so big. And there was this face-off in, where was this, Davos? Yes.
Yeah.
Still, Davos is still news. Brian was having coffee with Tony Blair, apparently, when Jamie Dimon walked up and cut in on this conversation, pointed his finger at Armstrong and said, "You are full of shit," accused him of lying about banks on TV. So why did Jamie Dimon do this? Armstrong apparently went on TV and accused big banks of trying to tank the Clarity Act.
Yeah.
When I think Jamie Dimon is like, no, dude, you're trying to tank the Clarity Act because you won't die on this hill of trying to invalidate our entire business model.
Sorry, dude. We had the genius. Sorry, Jamie Dimon. We had the genius bill. That already passed. The terms were agreed. Now you're stapling this yield-bearing interest thing into a Clarity Act. A Clarity Act's not about that. I'm definitely on the side of Brian Armstrong here. Although, part of me wonders whether whether a compromise on something is worth getting it passed, or whether we should just settle for no bill here. That there is a trade-off there, and I'm not sure what the right side of that trade-off actually is.
I would need to talk to somebody like Jake Stravinsky about that. Like, I do think the world where you can give yield to stablecoin holders is very interesting.
Yeah.
And is it so interesting that the rest of the bill is worth it? I'm not totally sure about that.
Yeah, I'm not sure either. I'm not sure how I feel, to be honest. Like, some other parts of the bill are incredibly useful for crypto. But the White House, of course, has a weigh-in on this because Trump is the pro-crypto president. as he's reminded us so often in the past. There was a two-hour meeting at the White House this week, included all the reps from the major crypto companies and the big banks. And basically, the take from Trump was, and I think Congress is, this has to get done in February.
Lock yourself in a room, figure it out, but get it done is what they said.
The White House set a deadline at the end of February for compromise on this yield language and warned that a failure to resolve the issue would risk the entire bill. Basically, they're not going to support it. You guys have to figure this out in February or it's not going to work. And so there's some reaction that there's some common ground. People are talking and they're trying to navigate their way through it. But if there's not progress by the end of February, Clarity Act is not looking good.
Yeah.
Polymarket, there's a 62% chance, which actually, I feel like that's up on the week from last time we looked at this, right?
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah. So there's the stablecoin hurdle that we have to get over. And, you know, at least that's, the people are talking, at least that's being productive. You know, February is a short month where it's only 28 days, so we don't have that much time. There's another roadblock, however, Ryan. And the White House is, this is the White House themselves. So while the White House is yelling at the banks and Coinbase to figure it out, they themselves are being a blocker because they will not give up the fact that the Donald Trump gets to continue to do crypto things in the bill.
Yes.
And so Trump's advisor, Patrick Witt, said for Coinbase that the White House will only back the crypto market structure bill if Democrats drop the most aggressive anti-Trump ethics language and refocus the text on industries rather than the president's personal holdings.
Oh, wow, yes. David. I feel like that's a hard position to take, huh?
This is something that apparently Donald Trump is, that's the hill that he is willing to die on, is he gets to continue to do crypto business. And so the Democrats are currently strategizing with the industry to balance ethics on stuff like this. So they're kind of teaming up with other industry leaders to like make sure that this part of the bill does get enforced.
I bet the Democrats would sign off on some other concessions if they got anti-corruption, like, you know, Trump stuff in there, because Trump family has made billions maybe on crypto so far.
Well, this was also news this week. So Abu Dhabi bought a 49% stake in World Liberty Financial. This was news that the Wall Street Journal broke. Bought the stake for about $500 million days before Donald Trump was inaugurated for president. This deal was not public. We are now finding out about this. And the Wall Street Journal also alleged, in addition to the 49% stake for $500 million, at least $187 million of that was upfront payment that went directly into the pockets of Trump family-controlled entities. So using WLFIL, World Liberty Financial, as like kind of the conduit here. $187 million got pocketed by Trump families just 4 days before Trump
was elected. Just owners kind of draw distribution, not investment that's staying in World Liberty Finance. And of course, World Liberty Finance, it's a stablecoin and it's a lending and borrowing protocol. It's like not super complicated here.
Yeah.
It's you know, fork of Aave or something like Aave.
We call it decentralization theater. I'll call this utility theater. Utility theater, like it's a fork of Aave in the front, but it's Donald Trump's pocket in the back.
Sure. And so this is like $200 million of direct cash flow to the Trump family. And the thing here that the Wall Street Journal is reporting is that this was a quid pro quo. Mm-hmm. It's basically after that, later in May, the UAE, which didn't have access to NVIDIA, the latest AI chips, then got access to it. Right. So the Trump administration basically said, okay, you guys can have access to it. And there's no...
Because this is the Biden CHIP Act. The Biden CHIP Act, when Biden was in office, put in this rule that prevented certain countries from getting access to chips. And then Donald Trump just leveraged that. It's like, hey, Saudi Arabia, Arab countries, would you like access to chips? Please put $187 million in my pocket.
That's the allegation. And it's not just Trump and family. It's also, you know, Trump's special envoy to the Middle East, Steve Witkoff. His son actually is the CEO of World Liberty Finance. His family entities received $31 million, according to the Wall Street Journal. Okay, so, and this is all alleged corruption of, you know, crypto and state secrets and using your position as president and political influence in order to enrich your pockets by route of crypto, right? So it's not great. So Trump was actually asked about this, and here's what he said.
Mr. President, the Wall Street Journal reported that the royal family of Abu Dhabi invested hundreds of millions of dollars in your World Liberty Financial.
Can you explain why you decided to take that investment? Was that a transaction?
Well, I don't know about it. I know that crypto is a big thing and they like it. A lot of people like it. The people behind me like it. My sons are handling that. My family is handling it. And I guess they get investments from different people, but I'm not. I have all I can handle right now with Iran and with Russia and Ukraine and with all the things we're doing. So I don't know.
There you go. Trump doesn't know anything about it. It's his sons handling it. He's got
crypto's a big thing,
more
though.
Stuff to handle. So there's that, David. I mean, it's definitely been a double-edged sword with the Trump administration.
I definitely think this is part of the story about why crypto is like crumbling in price right now, like downstream of news like this.
What do you mean? Like just its image?
The image brand, like we are now just becoming so incredibly branded alongside of Trump corruption. Like Trump is doing great things for the industry in the sense that like we're finally getting regulation passed, the regulation that we've always wanted.
And he's also getting paid for it.
And he's also taking his pound of flesh as a result. And the future blowback to the industry might be significant.
Well, one benefit, though, is with clarity in front of Congress, we get interactions like this. You remember Brad Sherman, famous crypto hater? Brad Sherman versus Secretary of Treasury Scott Bessent.
Do you have the authority to order banks to buy Bitcoin or to invest U.S. tax dollars in Bitcoin or Trump coin?
I am Secretary of the Treasury. I do not have the authority to do that. And as chair of FSOC, I do not have that authority.
So we're not going to see our tax dollars invested in crypto assets.
Well, why would a private bank be your tax dollars, Congressman?
Excuse me. I'm now asking about the money of our taxpayers, which you manage as Secretary of the Treasury. Is it going to be deployed into crypto assets?
We are retaining seized Bitcoin.
That's not exactly taxpayer money. You collect a lot of taxes this month.
No, that is an asset of the U.S.
It's an asset of the U.S.
It was government.
Are you going to invest? And I
will point out,
Mr. Secretary, reclaiming my time. Are you going to invest?
From the asset seizure, that 1 billion of Bitcoin was seized, 500 million was retained, and that 500 million has become over 15 billion.
The gentleman's time has expired.
Boom, mic drop. I do love to see Brad Sherman put his place on topics like that. But
dude, nothing just kills my faith in democracy faster than watching these congressional hearings. And they are just asking these stupidest questions.
Showboating and jockeying and looking for clips. Yes. Well, we played the clips, so I guess it's working. Good job,
Brad.
Well,
Bradshaw. I don't think that was the clip that he wanted us to play. It wasn't what the clip he was looking for.
Moving on, David. Ondo Finance, now on MetaMask as well. This is kind of cool. So tokenized stocks in your MetaMask wallet.
Yep. This is how we win. Tokenized stocks on-chain, accessible with neobanks on Ethereum. Don't forget the world's greatest super app. It's Ethereum. Also, in this world, Bitwise has acquired Chorus One. Chorus One is a staking operator. And they are just buying Chorus One to increase their, what do you want to call it? Their on-trail yield opportunities. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, this is their second actually staking acquisition. Do you recall?
Yeah. Why did they buy two?
More the merrier. I mean, staking is consolidating. Staking operators are consolidating, right? It's like Bitwise, asset managers acquiring staking providers, not just one, two in this case. Chorus One was doing more than I think is a company called Attestant that they acquired, which is primarily ETH staking. Does all of the other networks. So it's just an expansion in that dimension.
Ethereum is also getting its standard for AI agents. 8004 got introduced last week. We did an entire podcast on this with Davide Krapis and Austin Griffith. So we're going to have more of that. But like ERC-8004, it's like an identity construct, an identity primitive for agents to give agents reputation and give them a spirit of sorts, so that people can know what they are and what they do and how people think about them.
I think it's cool. I really hope this standard catches on. David, this is in your neck of the woods, I think. Okay, I didn't think this was real when Polymarket announced it. They said, after months of training, planning, we're excited to announce the Polymarket is coming to New York City. By the Polymarket, they're talking about New York's first free grocery store. Is this real? This is AI generated.
This looks like AI generated. That's definitely true. But it is a real thing. It's only for 5 days. It's a 5-day free grocery store. So it's a pop-up market. Not be permanent. I don't know where it is. I bet you it's out of my way.
Are you going to go? You should go.
I have to figure out where it is. Like, depending on the neighborhood, dude, like it could be really far away from me.
So I feel like Polymarket is genius when it comes to attention and engagement. And they got some engagement with your mayor,
Mamdani. My mayor, who I just love. I love my mayor. This is Mamdani tweeting out a tweet. It's the classic tweet of the worst person you know just made a very great point. And so Mamdani ran on a platform of like free government-run grocery stores.
Yeah.
Very commie. And then he's retweeting Polymarket, which is like the worst person you know just made a very good point. Because like it's Polymarket doing the Mamdani campaign thing. But he's like negging Polymarket.
Yeah, why is Polymarket the worst thing?
Which is inside it was in New York. That's where Polymarket was born. That's where Shane Copeland created Polymarket. So this is it's his constituent. And, you know, like Mamdani.
Why is Polymarket the worst thing that Mamdani, like
because Mamdani is like super lib, and libs hate all the hyper financialization of prediction markets and also capitalism.
Yeah, that's part of it. But also, I don't think that, you know, Trump and family corruption schemes are giving crypto a good reputation. And so it's been
probably also true.
Very much a right coded issue now. Crypto is,
I guess so.
Crypto is partisan, unfortunately.
Yeah. Either way, yeah. I hate both sides of those things.
Yeah. Welcome to the 2026, I guess, yeah, David. Well, speaking of two sides, we got two sides on the Super Bowl. We got the Seahawks versus who? Is it the Patriots again?
Who? The New England Patriots.
Oh, yeah. My God.
Do you remember the last time the Seahawks played the New England Patriots in the Super Bowl?
No. When was that?
This was when I was in college. So it was going to be like 2014 or 2015 or something like that.
Yeah.
And we had Marshawn Lynch, who was like the greatest. I don't even know what position he played because I don't know football, but he ran a lot and he ran very, very hard. And that's what he was known for doing. He was the greatest runner of all time. And we were at like the 1 yard line with like a few seconds left to go. And our general manager, our coach, Pete Carroll, decides to throw it. And like everyone at the time was like, Marshawn's going to run it. And they decide to throw it at the 1 yard line. I think just because like everyone knows that we have the best runner of all time. They're obviously going to give it to Marshawn Lynch to get over the 1 yard line and score the touchdown. And then Pete Carroll's like, no, we're going to fake him out. We're going to throw it. And they throw it and it was intercepted at the 1 yard line and they lost. And that's what happened the last time the Seahawks played the New England Patriots.
Well, you'll be happy to know they got 69% odds on a Polymarket right now.
Nice.
So this game could go. I imagine you're a Seahawks fan, right? You got to be.
Yeah. I mean, like I have watched zero football games this season.
Okay. Actually, so I'm excited about this football game just also because of a particular commercial that I want to play in the moment of Zen. So this is like Anthropic versus OpenAI. Mm-hmm. And I am
throwing strays at each other.
Okay. I'm loving this rivalry because so OpenAI has recently announced that they are introducing ads in ChatGPT. And Anthropic is throwing down and saying, we will never have ads. And so this ad is going to play during the Super Bowl and talk about that exactly. And I love, and I hope, David, for no ads in AI moving forward. I think AI plus ads brings a very toxic brew that is going to like prey on us in a way that, you know, that is far beyond order of magnitude more mm-hmm. than social media and could lead to some like pretty dark, bad things. And I am hopeful that models exist that are just, you just pay for them. I just want to
pay for
I
them.
Just want to
pay for
monthly.
Products without ads? Crazy.
That's right. Because I don't want to be the product in AI. Yeah. It feels like a very bad place to be. Anyway, we're going to play that in a minute in the moment of Zen. Before I do, got to let you know, none of this has been financial advice. God knows, not this week. Crypto is risky. You could lose what you put in, but we are headed west. This is the frontier. It's not for everyone, but we're glad you're with us on the Bankless journey. Thanks a lot.
How do I communicate better with my mom?
Great question. Improved communication with your mom can bring you closer. Here are some techniques you can try. Start by listening. Really hear what she's trying to say underneath her words. Build conversation from points of agreement. Find a connection through shared activity. Perhaps a nature walk. Or if the relationship can't be fixed, find emotional connection with other older women on Golden Encounters, the mature dating site that connects sensitive cubs with roaring cougars.
What?
Would you like me to create your profile?
What's the difference between me and you? Me and you? Me and you? Me and you?